Courtside Conversations.
Courtside Conversations.
The Roland Garros Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Courtside Conversations, the new Roland Garros podcast. My name is Gigi Salmon, and together with special guests, we're going to be keeping you company throughout the year. Think of it as tennis with a French twist, with the second Grand Slam of the year never too far from our thoughts. And I'm delighted to say that alongside me for the first podcast, former world number two, two-time Roland Garros finalist, winner of 17 singles titles on the ATP Tour, now expert analyst, commentator, and host, Alex Kurecha. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Gigi, thank you so much. What an introduction. Now I'm realizing I'm getting nervous because I was so chill, just waiting for, just say hi, Alex, and all these memories coming to my mind. So thank you for having me for the first show. I'm so delighted.
No, it's lovely to have you here. How was your Christmas and your New Year?
Very good, thank you. Just back home, relax, and just chill, just waiting to go into, commentating the Australian Open in a few days. So everything's going to be nice and great and just ready and pumped for the new season. You know, always when the season starts, it's always like something new, something fresh on your heart.
But it feels like the tennis season never really stops because now we've got all the exhibitions through December. Whether you're a tennis player or you're working in the sport, there's not that much downtime.
Yeah, it is difficult because usually you need some time to just prepare for the next season. But, you know, nowadays it's different. The players, they don't like to do like long off seasons, like 6 or 7 weeks as we used to do. And I think it makes like the seasons, like it seems like they go together from back to back. But at the end of the day, you know, it's just December and then January. The good thing is like they move normally where the sun goes, you know, where the heat is. And this is a little bit better for the players because if you will only play on, let's say, cold conditions, that would be tougher. So I'm glad that they're back in Australia.
Oh, it's better for us as well. It's definitely a good thing following tennis that follows the sun. Now, did you always know that when you stopped playing, you would stay involved in tennis or you'd like to stay involved in tennis in some capacity?
Honestly, not. I mean, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I was just going day by day, you know. The thing is, like, I was always dreaming to become a tennis player since I was a little kid, since I was 10, and I was practicing, like, 4 hours a day, and I was studying in the afternoons just with a personal teacher, you know. So it was, a different, let's say, a story, like, for a normal kid. And then once you stop, you are like, okay, what am I going to do? And somehow it came TV and they told me if I wanted to commentate matches and I started with that and then I started doing interviews and then I started presenting shows and doing some different stuff, and some coaching from time to time, Davis Cup captain. You always feel like you want to be involved in something that you know the most, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be on TV or radio or maybe on court. I didn't really know.
Now, with this being the Roland Garros podcast, I must get a memory from you. I was thinking about this and I thought it's an easy question, but it's a difficult question for you because you had those two finals, didn't win the finals. So I'm asking for your memory. Is it one of those finals or is it something else at Roland Garros over the years?
No, Roland Garros, it's part of my life. It is on my heart. When I talk about Roland Garros, I could be very emotional because I lived my best moments on Grand Slams. Of course, I have the first memory of playing that finals against Moya, but Carlos was better than me, you know, and I was probably not ready. I was already happy reaching the finals. And then I felt like, okay, I want to be a champion. I don't want to be the loser. You know, I want to just become one day one of the guys standing there with the Coupe de Mousquetaire. And I have to tell you, if you ask me about my worst memory in my tennis career, it's losing that final against Kuerten because I put everything I had on. And it is probably the toughest match I ever lost. It's just because I had the feeling that I was ready to do it. I won the ATP Finals, the Masters Cup, like a few years before. So I had the experience already of big moments. I was up a set. I was up a break in the second, and then he came back. And then I have one backhand down the line at 5-5 in the second break point to go 6-5 and serve for the second set with a win. And I missed that backhand for like an inch. from that very moment, everything turned around for Guga, and the crowd was like adopting Guga in his favor because they didn't have that many French guys. I beat Grosjean in the semifinals. I beat Piolin in the semifinals back in '98. So I felt like everybody was against me nearly, and that killed me so much. Mentally, Guga was so tough. He was number one, and on clay was super difficult to beat. And yeah, it's a tough memory, but at the same time, you know, every time I enter Roland Garros, I feel like I'm home. Everybody likes me so much. I like them very much. My connection with the crowd is great. Even if I remember that when I finished that final against Kuerten, I was very upset. But still, you know, Roland Garros, it's by far my favorite tournament of the year.
It's a wonderful place. It's a special place. And if we look at the tennis yes. calendar for this year, it's going to be extra special because it's Olympic year. It's Paris 2024. Mm. And the tennis event, Alex, is going to be on the clay at Roland Garros.
Yes, this is very unique because most of the time when you play like the Olympics, usually you play on hard courts because normally the places, the cities they play, usually they play more on hard courts, except when they play at Wimbledon. Or remember back in Barcelona 92 when they played on clay as well. But this year, it is different. It's something in the air, you know, feeling that you're going to be at Roland Garros. It's going to be different, more chances to people that maybe they don't have that many chances on hard courts because it's the stick to some players. But on clay, you know, there are not that many clay court specialists anymore, Gigi. Before, they used to be like more the Argentinians, the Spanish, but now everything is a little bit more mixed. And it's going to be interesting because they're going to play the whole clay court season, then the grass court season, and they got to go and play at Roland Garros, which I heard cannot be called Roland Garros during the Olympics because it has to be like the, I don't know, international center, tennis center or whatever because of the names of the Olympics.
And I feel bad because when we look back on your Roland Garros career, you said, well, this is probably my worst memory, that final. So let me flip it. Let me have a good memory here, winning an Olympic medal in the doubles in Sydney.
Well, this is special, yeah. And no, but I have to tell you, I mean, my consistency was huge at Roland Garros. That's why I'm telling you what, many people, when I'm back somewhere in my life, they tell me like, oh, how many Roland Garros did you win? And I'm like, no, I haven't. And they're like, no, for sure, you won like two or three. And I'm like, no, it's just because for 5 years in a row, I played at least the quarterfinals. So I played quarters, finals, semifinals, finals, quarterfinals. So they see you many times. So it's a good memory, but I have to say about that match. And about the Olympics, well, they're very special because you only play that from 4 years to years. The beginning, maybe for the tennis players, they were not as special because usually you see that more in the athletics or the swimmers or whatever. But already since a long time ago, the Olympics, they become so important in the in your tennis career. And we had the chance to play in Sydney with Albert Costa. We played doubles together. We had an unbelievable relationship. And we were, well, lucky enough to win a bronze medal, which I have to tell you, it was pretty much like a miracle. We never expected that. I had the feeling before going to the Olympics that I had two goals. It was first to go into the ceremony, which it was probably one of the best memories of my life because everybody's like screaming and singing and crying and taking pictures and you hug with everyone. You don't care, but you see someone, it's like so emotional and you go and hug him and it's like, oh, and you see like the Spanish, you know, like sweaters or whatever and you feel like, oh, okay, so they're from my country, you know, but then you see other ones and then you like to take pictures with everyone. And this is unbelievable. And then standing there like at the podium with a bronze medal, you know, the feeling like when they put the medal on top of your neck and with Costa next to me, it was very, very special.
And someone you feel this year could be extra special for is Rafa Nadal. Now, it was an absolute joy to see him back in Brisbane. The first match against Dominic Thiem, that brutal match against Jordan Thompson. But then that pleasure of having him back, Alex, was contrasted with the pain of the body breaking down. And then ultimately, Nadal saying he could not and will not be playing the Australian Open.
Yes, I mean, Rafa's comeback, you could feel that it goes beyond tennis. You know, it goes in the street, you know, and I'm walking somewhere in Barcelona and someone comes to me and says, oh, Rafa is back. He won today again, you know, and now you realize how big is Rafa, you know, my feeling is like since he hasn't played last year, this year is going to be like a party every time he plays, because everybody's having more the feeling like, oh, might be over in 1 year or so. And usually you don't realize how good things are until you don't lose it. And with Rafa, I think we have this feeling like every tournament he will play, everybody will be so enthusiastic. And we will make like a tribute to him and appreciation from what he's done. And when we talk about my memories, and I feel like it was a great career for me playing Roland Garros, you know, those finals and the quarterfinals, whatever. And you feel like Rafa won 14 times. It's like, what? 14 times. I don't think we ever thought carefully about how difficult and how impossible it is to do that. It is, I don't know, beyond the limits of the human brains and capacities to achieve that, honestly.
It was interesting. I was speaking to a friend of mine who also works in sport, a Spanish friend. And I said, I haven't really heard a lot about Carlos Alcaraz. And they said, of course you haven't, because Rafa's back. And that's what we're focusing on. We're focusing on this could be a special year. Going for, if fit, a 15th Roland Garros. Going for the Olympics on the clay at Roland Garros, it's all about Nadal. And I think the good news we take from the recent injury is that he said, Alex, it's a micro tear, but it's not in the same place where he had the injury last year.
Well, this is crucial. I mean, because after you haven't played for so long, it's normal that some other injuries or some problems can come up. And luckily or fortunately, it's going to be just a few weeks or so. And also, you never know, you know, he started from 0 to 100, you know, right away, because when you're so good and you start winning matches right away, maybe when you're not that good, maybe you play one match and then you play another match the next week. But since Rafa is so good, he's playing matches, he's winning, you know, and we'll see what's going on. Of course, in a way, maybe it's good that he's not capable to play Australia because it's best of five. And maybe he plays two or three matches, best of five, 3 or 4 hours. And then maybe that injury can come up again. So you never know what can happen.
You've said in the build-up to this new season that you believe Carlos Alcaraz can win all four Grand Slams in his career. He can win the Tour Finals. And this year, the Australian Open, the conditions he didn't play last year will be really suited to him.
Yeah. That means that you've been chasing me. You've been looking at me from what I'm saying, or what?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You know what? You never know what you're saying. It could go. You know, it's like we're talking now, and then all of a sudden you see some headlines or whatever about one comment that you did, and you are like, "Oh, did I say that?" Because sometimes you talk to people or you do interviews, but you don't really realize that much. And I remember I said that, and I sustain it. I maintain
good
that I feel like Alcaraz has the potential to win all majors. He has the potential to win the ATP finals, and it could suit his game very much to play in Australia. Then if he loses early in Australia, which I doubt it, but if that happens, some people would say, you have no idea. And I don't care. It's a matter of what I feel before the tournaments, what I feel from the players. You know, we're not magicians. We're not just saying what's going to happen, but we have a feeling about the players when they're off court, on court. But at the same time, Gigi, you're not spending time with them in their practices every day, or you don't know what's going on in their families, or if he has a fight with someone. That's difficult to know. So you're just, let's say, talking about your general idea of what can happen. But then there is the human being behind that you don't really know. And some of them, of course, you are in touch and you talk to them. But I'm not going to Carlitos Alcaraz's house every night to know how he's feeling, or Rafa's, or, you know, or whatever other player, even if I like them and I have good relationship, you know. But I feel Carlitos, he's going to be great and he's going to have an amazing season. And I'm not putting pressure to him. He's the one putting pressure to himself, saying that he wants to become one of the greatest in history. and we're just talking about what we feel about him.
And that's why we use these tournaments in the lead up to a Grand Slam, especially to get a feel for how things are. So staying with Brisbane, Andy Murray, unfortunately for him, comes up against Grigor Dimitrov in the first round. He's starting his 20th season on tour. But Grigor Dimitrov, I think the wonderful thing, went on to win Brisbane. He's wonderful to watch. He's got a great game style. But to see the confidence that he's taken from the back end of last year that he's brought in to 2024.
Yeah. I mean, well, you saw that, you know, maybe you lose the first round for Andy. It might be like, oh, I was ready. I was practicing well. But then when your opponent ended up winning the tournament, you feel relief because you feel like, okay, I was okay, but I faced someone that he was playing better. And the story with Grigor is it's beautiful. You saw already how he ended up playing very well in Bercy. It was huge for him, you know, like he was knocking on the door again about playing well. I don't really know. I love Grigor the way he is. Personally, I love the way he plays. But I feel, in my opinion, that he had so much pressure in his career comparing him with Roger because he was playing one-handed backhand and they have, let's say, similar styles. And I don't know if at some point he created so much expectations about himself. Then when he won the Masters Cup, you know, he felt like, oh, maybe I'm getting ready for the next step about winning a slam or whatever. It never happened. And I don't know if it was easy for him to deal with that, you know, all the expectations outside and everybody saying, and he's very charismatic because of the way he is, the way he plays. And I'm so happy that he ended up winning that match, that tournament. He fell down on his knees and such a relief moment for him to feel like he's back on track on the winning style, you know, because when you play semifinals and quarters and finals, it's nice. That shows that you are ready. But until you don't make the whole thing winning, you always have the doubt that if it will come again. So it's been so many years, so it's beautiful for Grigor.
Yeah, first title since 2017. I think 112 tournaments had passed between titles. And then on the other side of the net, you could see at the other end of his career, 20-year-old Holger Rune. And we talk about players investing in themselves because you are a business. You're investing in yourself. He has put together a crack squad. His mother will always be there. But now we have Boris Becker and we have Severin Luthi.
Well, that shows a lot and tells a lot about him. He is, he's got unbelievable desire. And I think these kind of combinations, when you have your mom or your dad that knows you very well and they grew up with you and they've been teaching you so many things, it is good that they stay there, but they let the experts or the people that they've been there on the tour as a coaching or like Severin or like the case of Boris, you know, that they lived those moments before, you know, they've been there, they've been dealing with the situation of serving for a tournament or dealing with the pressure of before the matches or become like a big star, you know, and Holger, he's going to be a big star. And he hires someone like Boris Becker, cannot have a bigger star nearly in the tennis world, you know, because you have someone that he knew exactly what was going on those moments where he needs to deal all of a sudden with stuff that we don't even know. You know, we've been tennis players, they've been legends, you know, and it's different when you are a tennis player or you are a legend. In my opinion, it is something that you need to deal with situations that you don't expect. And I think Holger could become such a great player, you know, and I like the way he practices. I follow him on social media and he always posts things practicing and working hard, you know, and he's getting bigger and bigger. So I think he's going to have an unbelievable season.
And he's got personality. And I think that's the other thing. We need those characters.
Yes.
We need those personalities. So one of those personalities is Andre Rublev. I mean, everyone loves Andre Rublev. And he's just won the title in Hong Kong. We also had the United Cup. I want to sort of finish off the ATP side before we move on to the WTA. But Iga Świątek got the MVP. Germany would come out with a title. But I mean, things from the United Cup, starting with Alex de Minaur, who cracks the top 10 for the first time in his career, and Sasha Zverev, who had that horrible injury a while back at Roland Garros. But boy, how well he played through the United Cup.
Yeah, well, you brought up so many names now. So it's like from Iga to Sasha
to
Alex.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have such a, I think, like a very interesting competition, you know, to start the year. I think it's great because normally what happens is you don't have maybe it's such a big rhythm coming into a little bit of an off season. And, you know, playing singles and some mix, you know, and you saw Deminar beating Novak. Hopefully Novak's going to be okay with his wrist, etc. Sasha Zverev, you know, I'm sure that is still something inside Sasha that he feels that he can win a major. He's been there for so many years. He has the experience. He's been winning Masters 1000, playing final of Slam, winning the Masters. You know, there is something about what happened with him back at Roland Garros. Last year, he came back. He ended up being in the top eight, which was a great effort. Now he's winning the United Cup. You know, I don't know. I have a feeling with him that he's such a professionalist. You know, he's someone that he's such a worker. You know, such as someone that always fights so much. You know, with the whole desire. So hopefully he can make it one day, because I think he's been there so many years, also with a lot of pressure about winning tournaments. And what can we say about Iga? You know, yeah, well, you win the MVP. I don't think you care about that much. You want to win the whole thing. But at least she's been winning her matches. You know, she's been playing well. And she's showing that she's a very solid number one. And she's improving so much her game on hard courts. On clay, I think she's going to be pretty much the most dominant player. But we'll see. Still a long way to go.
You mentioned Novak Djokovic and the wrist. How concerned are you, and how concerned were you when you saw him getting treatment to the wrist?
Well, I am concerned in a way that you always like to see the best players to play in the best conditions possible, because then you figure out who's the best player, you know? When they have problems, they get injured, or the shoulder, or elbow, wrist, etc. It's tough, because then it's sort of like feel like it's not like you need to find an excuse to tell everyone that you're not ready. But if something is wrong, it is obvious that you're not 100%. That's part of the game. That's part of the business. That's part of our life. Gigi, at the end of the day, you only see the players playing on court. But then they're traveling. They're spending time in hotels. They're spending time in the airports, in planes, with time difference, with different temperatures. Different, of course, different balls and different courts. So things are much tougher than they appear, even if you're a privileged person. And of course, you make an unbelievable great living, and it's a huge honor to be a tennis player, and it's such a privilege. There are things behind that people don't really see. And the main thing we feel, and not just about tennis, it's about the judge that people do about the others when we don't know. So I think this is something that we should all learn about it. So you never know what's going on. It's like if you see me now and you're like, oh, what's going on with Correia? He looks so old. He's having such a gray hair. And it's like, yeah, okay, so what? Relax. You know, I'm saying this because people, we manage to talk about the others, and sometimes we forget about the thing about us, you know? And I think that in general in life, that this is happening too much, and I don't think it always needs to be in a good way, which is not nice.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I didn't mention the hair. And Alex, you're looking great. You're starting.
I'm worried about the light, you know.
No, the light looks beautiful. It looks all fabulous. And I have to say that before Djokovic had the treatment for the wrist, I would have put him ahead of everybody else going into 2024 and going into the Australian Open, especially with how and just have a listen to Novak Djokovic here speaking after the Masters final about his 2023.
I and my family have been through this year, being one of the, you know, most successful years in my career that I ever had. 4 out of 5 major tournaments I won and played finals in Wimbledon. So, you know, I couldn't ask for more, to be honest. I'm very, very proud of this season.
I don't know what more there is to say about Novak Djokovic. I mean, he's phenomenal, and he just keeps on giving and keeps on winning and keeps on getting better.
I think he's just fantastic. I mean, he's been dealing with the whole situation like in a way that I'm not so sure too many players or not too many athletes or not too many human beings would be able to deal with. I mean, especially everything that happened back in Australia a few years ago with the whole situation, you know, that was for sure horrendous for him. But for sure, he learned so much. It was like a moment where he realized he needed to stick into his ideas, into his thoughts, into his principles, you know, and such a respect for him because I think he's one of the sports guys that he always brought up something different, and he speaks up with no problem, you know. He's just talking about himself, but also in other issues, and he gets involved in things. I think he's very authentic, and people that they don't like Novak, I would say it's mainly because they don't know him personally, first. And second, because we live in my opinion, in a world, especially the tennis world, where everything has to be great on court. You need to behave well. And Novak sometimes breaks rackets, sometimes shouts, sometimes gets crazy. Sometimes he gets, you know, anxious on court and he needs to let it out. And people just misunderstand that about like, oh, I don't like Novak Djokovic. Why? Because he just broke a racket? Or you don't know him. When you see him or when he does an interview, even like when we mentioned about before me going on court to talk with Novak, for example, on Philippe Chatrier, you only need to put the microphone on and say, Novak, I don't know, whatever question. And he goes like, boom. And he explains everything perfectly, you know. So such a inspirational guy, in my opinion. And I think he's someone that, I don't know, he adds so many things into this world, not just in the tennis world.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Now there's going to be all these people shouting at the podcast saying, you haven't mentioned this person or my favorite player. There is just so much to get through. And I want to get to the WTA, and you touched on Iga Świątek. So let's begin by just having a little listen to the 2023 year-end number one, the MVP from the United Cup, Iga Świątek.
Coming back to world number one, it's a dream come true for sure. You know, I would say I wasn't expecting that right now this season. I was kind of hoping that maybe next year is going to be my year, but it seems like, you know, just working hard and focusing on the right things at the end worked. So I'm really happy.
She's quite incredible, Iga Świątek. I think sometimes, Alex, we forget how young she still is and how successful she has already been.
Yeah, I think she knows exactly what she wants right now. I think, of course, like everybody else, you know, she's getting more mature, more experienced. And definitely what I like about her is like she's trying to improve things all the time. And I think she's doing an amazing job with her coach, with Thomas, you know, and the whole team, you know, because I think they're trying to not just to win in today's game. They're trying to improve because they see that the opponents are getting better. They're getting stronger. They're getting bigger, you know, and they hit the ball harder. So she needs to find solutions against those opponents. And I like the way she's managed to change a little bit her serve, her second serve, her forehand, of course, her footwork, you know, but her determination, it is unbelievable, you know. And I like to see her winning because she's there to win, you know. She's focused on her stuff, you know. And, of course, she's, you know, she's like feeling like she wants to become one of the greatest, you know. And for that, you have no time to just to waste, you know. And I think it's very nice what she does. And it's such a player that when you see her play, you feel like, oh, who's going to be able to beat Iga? This is very difficult. You need to have a big weapons to do that.
And some of those players have got big weapons, and the storylines through 2024, Aryna Sabalenka. So this is the first time she's going to be defending a major. How will that go? Elena Rybakina, who just beat Sabalenka in the Brisbane final. And I think she must be one of the hardest players to play because she has such a poker face. You don't know what Rybakina, is she happy? Is she sad? Is she happy with how things are going? Is she not? And she's got the weapons. And then we've got the returning Naomi Osaka, who's come back with this new lease of life for tennis.
Yeah, I mean, starting with Sabalenka, I think she is unbelievably good for the tour. She's great for tennis, the way she is. She's very explosive, you know. I think she's learning how good she is. I think before she had the potential, but now she knows that maybe she doesn't need to hit the ball as hard as she can every single shot. And she's dealing with more solid situations. And I like the way she's on and off the court. I think she's just beautiful to talk to her as well. You know, she always gives lots of things. And yeah, about Rybakina, I mean, it might be so difficult, not just by the way she plays, as you said, because when you're talking to someone, you want to feel like some feelings there at some point. But it's the way she is. I respect her so much because she's such a cute person, you know, very polite and well-educated all the time, very appreciation, you know. And it's someone that, yes, with the serve, she's killing you with the return, with the forehand, the backhand. So I'm sure it's not easy to play against her, especially like, I don't know, you're serving for the match at Wimbledon and you're expecting her to look at her and be panicking and she's like walking on the park, you know, and like, okay, can you show me if you are nervous or not? So maybe the opponents, they need to figure out some of the movements she does or the faces she put at certain moments to understand if she's nervous or not. Because for sure there is something, if you study a lot about the players and the body language, for sure they will find things. And Naomi, I mean, hopefully she's going to enjoy her time. You know, she's been playing unbelievable tennis. She's been showing that she's been the best and winning majors. And now I think being a mom, you know, it's going to give her such a different perspective in a way. She's going to probably enjoy more her time on court and off the court. And again, one of those moments where you deal with the pressure is not that easy, you know. And for Naomi, everything that happened at the US Open that year when she beat Serena and everything, the whole mess that it was going on, I think it didn't help her at all, you know, because in those situations where you're not that ready to know how to deal with that. I told you at the beginning of the interview, and hopefully people stay there still, I said, you've been dreaming to become great, but it's not that easy to know how to deal when you are great and you are good or when you are playing well, you know, because the more you practice, the more ready you are, but you need to get through moments where you never know how to practice that, you know, and it's not that easy to deal with the whole thing outside tennis, you know, there's lots of things going on.
So really nice to see Coco Gauff, who is still a teenager. She's only 19 years of age, having won the US Open, comes into this season and defends her title in Auckland, because there are going to be even more eyes on Gauff to see how she handles the pressure of now being a Grand Slam champion.
Yes, but I think she's doing unbelievable work, you know, because I remember when she was very little and then she was playing very well and she's been winning matches at Wimbledon. And then when she plays finals at Roland Garros and so much pressure, but then she found herself in a very nice way during the summertime last year. She ended up winning the US Open home soil, the whole crowd behind her. It looked like a Davis Cup match or Billie Jean King Cup, you know, match when she was playing every time, you know. It was beautiful to see the way she's dealing with that. And as you said, she's still a teenager. She started the year winning a tournament, tough match against Vitolina, but she hanging in there. It is unbelievable to see how involved is in things as well. You know, she's not just playing tennis. She likes to be involved and she talks loudly about what she feels is right and not. And how can you do that when you are 19? It's very impressive. You know, I remember on my time, you were always like feeling like, oh, if I say this or if I say that, maybe they misunderstand or whatever. Even now when you work on TV, you feel like, okay, I don't want to say something that some people will get. And at the end of the day, you know what, Gigi? You feel like, listen, this is the way I am. And if you respect everyone and you go with good manners and good values and you are well-educated, maybe you don't like, or they don't like you, everyone. But if you are yourself, I think it's the best way to go in life, just with no mask in your face.
Now, you've spoken about how open you think the fields are for this year's Australian Open. So I'm going to give you some warning. In a couple of minutes, I'm going to get your predictions, not just for Australia, but for the four slams and the Olympics. That's a lot of pressure because everyone's going to be saying what Alex Krejci has said. So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes. But before that, we're always...
No, but listen, before you go into that, are you asking me to predict the whole Grand Slam champions, men and women, and the Olympics?
Yeah.
I mean,
100%.
Are you...
Yeah.
No, there's no chance I can do
and
that
I'm gonna,
because I have no idea.
I'm going to hold you to it.
It's impossible.
I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to
We're going to have like 60 minutes of podcast. I will need to think about that.
Each podcast is going to have a French twist, a French flavor. It's all about Roland Garros. So you must be as excited as I think everybody who loves Roland Garros about the fact we are going to have a roof on Susan Longland. It's going to be elegant. It's going to be chic. It's inspired by Susan Longland's skirt created by Jean Patou. And it's going to look fabulous.
Yes. I mean, Roland Garros, you know, the whole surrender, you know, with Bois de Boulogne next to the courts, the last court when they built it like this, Simon Mathieu, you know, the way they did it with a lot of class. I mean, Paris is class. Paris is elegant. You know, Paris is a city where you breathe something different, you know. And when you enter Roland Garros, you know that, you know, the people, I mean, the French, I mean, they're very elegant. You know, when you see a guy or a girl being French, you always know that it's going to be well-dressed, well-shaped, you know, good-looking, with sensitive eyes, you know. There is something about the French that they have something that is different than the others, you know. I love the way they talk to you and they bien sûr and they pas comme ça, tu sais, tu te nerves parce que tu as la pression de quelqu'un te verra dans le jeu. So it's not that easy, you know. So Roland Garros, I like that they have another court with the roof, you know, because if it rains or whatever, even if it's, I don't know, so much wind, you know. I remember my days, I was playing some days, even the finals that I lost to Querten, it was so windy. And you're dreaming about playing the finals of Roland Garros. And the day that you're playing, I remember waking up and just open up the curtains of my room. And I'm like, oh, no way, such a shitty day again. Windy, nearly raining. Why? I've been fighting and hoping for this moment for the last 15 years of my life. And can I have the feeling that the ball is going to stay there, not moving all around? So I like when they put the roof on, even if it's very windy. I know the conditions, if it's windy, they shouldn't put the roof on. But for the show, I think it's always better.
Have you seen, talking about elegant and chic, have you seen the poster for Roland Garros 2024?
I haven't. So I would love to see it somehow.
Alex,
no, I haven't.
It's beautiful. It's a tennis court on the River Seine. The premise behind it was about tennis invading Paris. And we've got the Olympics coming up later this year. The artist Paul Rustu did it. It's beautiful. It's the view from above looking down onto the Seine that's been transported and transformed into a clay court.
I checked meanwhile also the poster by the River Seine. Unbelievable with the sunset, right?
How beautiful is that?
Unbelievable. It is very nice. Yet, you know, always when I was a little kid, I was always just hoping for a friend of mine to bring one of the shirts from Roland Garros because they always have, in my opinion, the best design of all four.
Available from April via the Roland Garros shop. So we're going to get ours there. So Alex, all I need to say now is it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for being our first guest on the new official Roland Garros podcast.
No, thank you for thinking about me. And even if I haven't won Roland Garros, you have me as a first guest. That means that you love me too. And I love Roland Garros. So I hope to be back there in June and having so much fun with everyone. So, and thank you for understanding me that doesn't make any sense to go with the prediction and mention about names just like this. Let's go day by day, point by point. This is tennis, Gigi.
It's tennis and it never stops. And that is it from the first episode of Courtside Conversations. Thank you for your company. When we return, there'll be an Australian summer to put to bed, a sunshine double of Indian Wells and Miami to look forward to. And our clay build-up will begin with Roland Garros in our sights. And I promise no more predictions. But until next time, bye for now.
Okay, salut tout le monde.
Take care.
See you soon. Bye.